Y ya estamos de vuelta. We are back and we are connecting with two another who are just about to present Suburbia, their latest album, to Spanish audience for, on a second visit this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, guys.
Hey,
what's up?
How you doing, guys? Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to see you again. So Barcelona's becoming like one of your, is it becoming your favorite city to play?
The Spanish crowds are always the best people to play to.
I mean, yeah, we're not, we're really not just saying that. Like the last time you came here, the reason we're doing a show so soon afterwards is because we had such a fun time and had such a good show and the crowds was crazy. So we wanted to come back and experience it again.
And it was all sold out and everything last time, I believe.
It was.
It was a fun show. It was like, I think it was like top three shows ever.
Top three shows. Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously.
It was it was such a fun vibe.
Yeah.
So your most recent album, as Johan mentioned, is called Suburbia. And is it a concept album?
It is. It is. We know it's a dirty word sometimes.
No, I like them. I like them.
But yeah, we wanted to do something different. It was like, you know, early, it was kind of around 2021. Mm-hmm. And it was a bit COVID at the time. And we were like wanting to, nothing really was happening in our lives. And so we wanted to write kind of through a vessel, which wasn't, you know, about writing about our own experiences. And, you know, everybody kind of has grown up in high school and knows kind of the kind of trials and tribulations of growing up. And so we kind of had this concept to write four EPs called Freshman, Junior, Sophomore. Well, I've already fucked it up.
Freshman, Sophomore, Junior, and Senior, and just kind of follow a character whilst growing up in the suburbs of the US. And yeah, kind of inspired by, you know, some coming of age films that we love and like our own lives, you know, stories we've heard from other people's kind of experiences growing up. And yeah, it was fun to write from different perspectives and create a story and a world around it.
Have you had experience in your personal lives growing up in a suburb? But because you've been moving all over the world all your lives, but did you have a fixed period of time when you lived in that kind of a kind of suburban life experience?
I mean, not really, I don't think, but it was, we kind of grew up quite in a city, but I think like the idea of wanting to leave where we grew up was something that we probably always felt. Not because like Sydney wasn't really fun for us growing up. It was more just, you know, Elliot was born in the States. I was born in the UK. We had like family connections to outside of Sydney. And so we always knew that we wanted to kind of explore the world and leave kind of where we grew up, which is a big kind of part of the story of suburbia.
Yeah, I guess a suburb is just a bubble, you know, it's a microcosm of, you know, of your life growing up. And I think there's a lot of love, hate kind of sentiment around, you know, that, you know, where you grow up, your town you grow up in. And yeah, we wanted to kind of explore that.
It's funny because I've just been watching three Spielberg classics, Close Encounters of a Third Kind, E.T. and Poltergeist. And all three films are set in this suburban kind of bubble, as you say, right? And it's kind of this idyllic thing where these incredible things happen because outer space. What are the coming of age movies that you're referencing when you were saying earlier that a lot of that has sort of flowed into this album?
I think you just said E.T., which was definitely like in terms of the world, like that, those classic suburban streets. Like when we think of the kind of visual world, we were thinking of like Edward Scissorhands, kind of very kind of like idyllic white, you know, white picket fences. But what's actually going on the inside is actually kind of messed up and there's lots of drama and stuff like that. And yeah, so that contrast that a lot of these coming of age suburban movies explore between the outwardly idyllic kind of you know, visuals is you know, contrasted with like the craziness that's happening in people's lives was something we were interested in.
But definitely like, you know, more recent films like Perks of Being a Wallflower and Moonlight and Boyhood and stuff like that. It's such a good genre coming of age because everybody has kind of been through it, so everybody can relate to it.
But funny, you mentioned idyllic. Like I find your own history as a group quite idyllic. I love the idea that you knew each other kind of young and then you eventually started making music and then you moved to London to form the band in 2013. Do you think, like, is it easier to be in a band with someone you know so well?
It's a good question, to be honest. I mean, and our, yeah, our upbringing was idyllic. We have kind of been super lucky to grown up in Sydney, which was amazing for us. You know, we couldn't kind of ask for a better place to grow up. And now we live in Europe, and like Amsterdam is one of my favorite cities in Europe, and Stockholm. I have two kids, and it's the best place to have kids. So we've been super fortunate in that way. But I think also just fortunate in the fact that we do get to make music with a friend, because we do know other people who make, they kind of join a band with someone that they've kind of been put together with, or they didn't really have that kind of history or background with. And I don't think maybe you have the kind of the grounding that maybe the history has.
You have to be, I have to be able to say to Angus, dude, that idea is terrible. And he has to be able to say the same to me. You know, you have to be able to be honest with each other. And that's, it's hard to do with someone that you, you know, don't know as well. At this point, we've known each other for so long, we're like kind of brothers. So it's easy in the studio.
I also understand that, correct me if I'm wrong, but you work with musicians in from any part of the world, because you're able to give instructions or whatever. How do you find musicians when you know, it's sometimes it's easier when you are from a city, you've been from that city for a long time, you're part of a scene. Oh, I need a bass player for this, I need a sax player for that. Oh yeah, I know that. How do you guys go about it? Is how do you attract musicians that understand what you're trying to put on tape?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think we've been lucky. Like, I worked at a studio in Sydney, and so we had a big network of people in Sydney that we could kind of call upon. And then when we moved to London, we just made a bit of an effort to kind of start meeting people.
We always felt it was like this untapped resource of like a lot of people wanting to make, you know, record all their own parts in their music. And we were like, why aren't people using these session musicians that are absolutely incredible and have been freaking honing their craft for their whole lives? And it started in Sydney. And then I think it's just word of mouth. It's like, it's actually quite a tight-knit kind of even global community, or at least, sorry, in Europe and the US, it's quite, there's a few guys that all know each other and they can put you onto each other. And it's like kind of all exists within this kind of similar network. So yeah, I guess it's just word of mouth, meeting people. Instagram's a big one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Because before, you know, anciently in the 80s, people would put an ad in a music magazine at the back, you know, I'm looking for a guitarist to form a band. If you like Joy Division and Sisters of Mercy, I'm looking for a drummer, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But nowadays with social media, yeah, which is the best place on internet, shall we say, to connect with?
Probably Instagram. I think Instagram, just because it's like nearly like everyone's website at this point. But we have actually found someone on like a Craigslist type thing back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know if you have Craigslist here. We call it Gumtree. But yeah, as you were just saying, when we very first started making music, we put an ad up, right?
Yeah, I think we were just like looking, when we moved to London, we were like looking for, you know, bassist. A guitarist or bassist. And then this guy, Luke, kind of replied. And then we ended up writing lots of stuff with him, and he joined the band. And
the first guy, he was amazing. And he's gone on, he plays for, you know, Nubian Twist and all these incredible jazz kind of, you know, bands. So he's amazing. And we found him just randomly on Gumtree.
See, I was quite surprised that you'd formed in London, because I'm going to, well, let me roll out all the cliches. I've never been to Australia, I should say. But, you know, for me, your music sounds quite Australian, bearing in mind that I've never been to Australia. You know, it brings, you know, it's quite sunshiny and laid back. And I lived in London for many years, and London is not sunshiny and laid back.
It's definitely not. It's kind of one of those funny things where when we started making music in Sydney, but the problem with Sydney is that the weather's always good. And the beach is always there. So whenever you're in the studio, you can never, like, you can always, like, should we just, you know, if things are getting tough, you're like, should we just go to the beach? Mm-hmm. And so we could never finish anything. Then when we moved to London, we actually, like, you know, really kind of locked in the studio. And there was nothing else to do other than just kind of be stuck inside because it was miserable outside.
So you worked on Back to Us, which was the previous album, for 5 years, right? And then Suburbia came just 2 years after that. Was it kind of hard to sort of accelerate that rhythm? You know, because, you know, 5 years on an album, it's your first album, you know, you've got a lot of time to do it. And then, right, there's got to be a follow-up. Was that hard?
I think maybe that's slightly confusing because I think Back to Us, we had like several releases in that 5-year period of making it, but they were just tracks that started, some of the ones that came started from 5 years prior to the album coming out. So slightly, the timeline is a little bit warped, but I mean, it's hard to kind of, you know, these days with streaming, people are releasing music so quickly that you kind of like, every time we release a track, a fan will be like, when's the next one coming out? So you kind of have to now pick up the pace a little bit when it comes to releasing music.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, we did set ourselves quite a big task to do a 16-track album. But yeah, and I mean, we had some amazing collaborators like on this one that really, I guess you can lean on and, you know, help kind of accelerate the writing process as well.
Yeah.
Which helped get it done.
I was going to say, there's a sort of fascinating mini documentary you did about Back to Us, basically. And I hope you don't mind. I mean, you talked about having some quite hard times when you were recording that. I wondered if you could sort of tell us a bit about that.
I was going through some mental health issues and some addiction problems at the time. This seems so long ago now, and that kind of very much stalled, I guess, our progress on kind of making the album and on kind of continuing the project in the way that we'd done previously. Definitely needed to take some time for myself, and we're more than happy to talk about it, because we think that mental health with musicians and artists is a serious issue, and I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of musicians and artists are, their emotion is so tied to their work that, you know, they sometimes lose track of, you know, themselves, and they can kind of spiral. And I guess that happened to me. And, we took the time that we needed out, and then we were able to kind of reunite and finish this album. And that became a theme of that particular album of, you know, the thing that kind of brought us back together and brought us, you know, together again to create more to another music was being in the studio and realizing we had such a connection together.
Do you have any sort of tips for musicians who might be, you know, finding things quite difficult?
I think as much as you can, I think I touched on it a little bit before, but like, yeah, just try and separate your music life from your personal life. Mm. You can a little bit, try and compartmentalize that a little bit. Don't be too hard on yourself. I think a lot of musicians are very hard on themselves. If they can't write a good song in that particular day, it means that they're not a good person or they're not good enough.
Yeah.
So try and realize that, you know, music is supposed to be fun and it can be stressful, but also you need to kind of take a step back sometimes and focus on your own mental health in order to be able to write the songs you want to write.
Yeah. Tell us about, you know, being in London around that era, 2015, even a bit later, when the whole new jazz explosion just took the world by storm, and you had people like Sons of Kemet coming up and Shabaka with all his numerous projects, and I don't know, all these incredible young bands of incredibly gifted musicians were all exploding, right? What was it actually like on the street? Like, was it just a question of like venues programming and offering space? Did you feel it? Did you feel that energy where everyone you would run into is like, yeah, they're tuned into this vibe?
Well, the Peckham scene was massive.
I think Peckham also coming from Australia, where, you know, there's a really vibrant music scene, but it's just not as big. Like, there's obviously a lot less kind of people there, that when we moved to London, you're immediately kind of put in this massive kind of city where there's a lot of people doing what you're trying to do. And so it does drive you kind of to, I don't know, just want to be better. Mm-hmm. And it really pushes you to kind of just keep making music. And just, I guess you're comparing yourself to nearly like a lot of other people, mm-hmm. which can be bad, but also can be sometimes good, because you can kind of, you can collaborate with these people. Mm. You can kind of learn from them. You know, we did a lot of writing sessions, which we hadn't done before. And when you get to go in a studio with someone new, you see little different things they do, whether it's from writing or production or playing. And so I think for us, it was a big motivator just mm-hmm. to want to be part of it and to kind of grow from it.
Yeah. And just seeing the success of these bands as well, and being like, okay, like this kind of smooth, soulful kind of music and, you know, jazzy music, it actually translates really well to a wider audience. I think that was quite inspiring for us on the first two EPs that we did.
Definitely, because in Australia, there's less of that kind of...
They were still on music. The surf rock kind of...
It's much more indie.
Indie rock thing.
Yeah. I get that feeling. And what about Amsterdam? I've always suspected that Amsterdam has to have, like, one of the best... small record shop scene, especially for like rare jazz records. Because just to give you some context of where I'm going with this, in Spain, because we were under a fascist dictatorship until the mid-70s, we were cut off. Spain was cut off from a lot of imports, right? They were censored, or they were just not allowed to be sold and stuff. So that's why in Spain, generally, we've been a bit slower in the dialogue of exchange of music than other European countries. Whereas Holland, I always get the sense that compared to other countries in the post-war, they were, you know, they were a country that was rich and that had a very good connection with music from the States and stuff. Is that still palpable nowadays? Like, is there an incredible rich fabric of, you know, of really good music to be found in bars, in record shops and stuff?
I would say yes. It's a very good live music scene. Like, your average kind of person in Amsterdam, they're buying tickets to see kind of mid-level, smaller size bands, I think more on per capita more than any other city in Europe, I would say. And the record shop thing you mentioned, it's definitely true. One of the beautiful things about Amsterdam is the odd kind of specific stores they have. Like, they'll have a record shop that's literally just like Turkish funk from 71 to 75. And you'll go in and it'll be like, you know, very kind of specific kind of stores, very hip kind of hipster kind of.
But I think because it's cool. Such a kind of low, like, it's a small community in a way, because everyone's quite densely populated and there are a lot of live music venues and everyone just, it's quite accessible because everyone's on bikes and it's not too expensive. That people do just seem to have a real appetite for live music. And for us, it's like probably our biggest kind of market for shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. So yeah. I need to get back to Amsterdam. And same with Stockholm. I mean, Stockholm,
lovely place.
And it's been, you know, very incredibly more progressive than we were in Spain in the 70s. Has it also got a really healthy current local scene?
I think it's more. I mean, in Stockholm, I'm kind of like nearly like a stay-at-home dad because I've got two kids. And
good on you.
We know what you're talking about.
Recuperating from two a life, so I've got like two lives in a way. But I mean, obviously with Stockholm, the music scene is very based around like the writers, because you've got Max Martin, which has spawned off this kind of big kind of pop writing world. So it is probably outside of LA and London, the third biggest kind of place to make pop music.
Oh.
The venues, the live music scene is a little bit different because it's just, I don't think they have as many venues as maybe some of the other kind of European cities. And so it does seem to be a tougher place to play for most artists. Like, not many people are selling out shows in Stockholm.
Weird.
Yeah, it is a bit strange like that. It's a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah. And speaking of pop, you were talking about Max Martin. I can't help but hear the influence. And more, were you big Justin Timberlake fans when you were younger?
Massive,
yeah.
it's because Pharrell as well.
Yeah,
Remember that video on MTV for Senorita when it's like Justin Timberlake is and Pharrell's on drums, and it was like, oh shit, this is really cool. Because they were like actually, you know, playing live music, and there was that vibe, and I just could feel that, and I thought I imagine that you guys might have had that phase when you were 12 or something.
Definitely like Timbaland, Pharrell, Mark Ronson, like Justin Timberlake, that kind of early 2000s.
Wave of producers.
Yeah, of wave of producers for us was like super kind of, inspirational. Mixed with like then electronic music and indie music and even old kind of Motown stuff. So there's a few different reference points there, but they definitely were like our heroes growing up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, your bio mentions D'Angelo, Daft Punk, and Danger Mouse, which is a fascinating trio.
3 Ds.
Yeah, exactly. 3 Ds. I mean, well, is there something that connects those acts? I was trying to think about it, other than the name starting in D, obviously.
It's probably more just like our tastes aren't necessarily just on one thing, I guess. We're trying to kind of...
Well, I think also a lot of those, I would say all those artists are either black or influenced by kind of, yeah, soul black music. And that for us has definitely been, you know, that is the music that we really have kind of gravitated towards, is a lot of that more, you know, soulful kind of music, which for two white guys from Sydney is... it's kind of funny in a way, but yeah, they paved the way for like a lot of artists to kind of do what we're doing now.
Yeah. Do you have a dream list of musicians you'd like to work with in the future?
That one to you.
Like dead or alive.
Ah. Okay, let's dead or alive. Dead or alive.
I mean, sometimes these lists seem hard because you're like, is it ever going to actually be possible?
Yeah, I mean Mark Ronson would be amazing.
That's possible. That's very possible.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's possible, but it would be
obviously a Pharrell session. I know he does a lot of sessions. Maybe we can get in.
A lot of people we probably mentioned.
Yeah, we've probably already mentioned all of the heroes.
I thought you were actually saying that your dream collaboration was Dead or Alive for a moment, which was quite...
That's pretty funny.
Pete Byrne collapsed. Although I think he's died as well. We have to go, I'm afraid. You're playing tonight in Barcelona, the Polo Dos, I believe.
Lovely venue.
It really is a lovely venue. And tomorrow night in Madrid La Copernica, which I've never been to, but according to Johan, is also a lovely venue. As I said, the last time you played in Spain, it was all sold out. So, get tickets before it's too late.
Yeah.
And, hope it goes really well. It will, I'm sure.
Thank you so much, guys. We love you all down at Primavera. You guys have been good to us. We want to continue to come back to Spain as much as we can. So, and thank you for the questions.
Yeah, have a great day, guys. That was awesome.
Yeah, all right. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Have a good lunch. Wow.
See ya.